Sometimes operatic roles are almost seen as sacred, like you're not allowed to fiddle with them because there's so much history attached to them. Why were you driven to try and weave a new narrative for women?
I was wanting to weave a new narrative for women because, as a contemporary woman, you're singing mostly historical repertoire. You don't really sing the work of living composers in traditional opera. And these glorious women that you get to sing, they sound exquisite, but they go through quite a lot of horrible trauma. They experience all kinds of violence, they often go mad, and they often die. And that's a sort of trope or convention, if you like, within the operatic repertoire, particularly of the 19th century. And so sometimes, as a contemporary woman, and I guess as a thinking woman, I find that a little bit difficult to swallow. These glorious, strong women just have to get topped off.
Yeah, now you think about all the wonderful operas, but that's what happens if you happen to be a bit clever and out the box. You're destined to not see the end of the performance, I suppose.
Yeah, that's right. There's a lot of ideas why it happens, but it's often to do with the power that these women held in 19th century. The diva on stage was very visible, and it was sort of sending a message to the women of the period to not get above themselves, perhaps. But there's also something about opera and high emotion that seems to want women to go through these experiences as a way of making us vulnerable as an audience and revealing the vulnerability of other characters on
Wow.
stage.
So where did you start then to sort of unravel the tradition?
I actually started with a myth called the Rape of Persephone, which is an ancient Greek myth, because in opera, particularly opera of the Baroque and classical period, they often wrote around historical myths. And so one of the ways to sort of tease out why these myths were incorporated and what they were doing to the characters was to actually work with a myth. And I chose a myth that had a woman who went through something terrible but came out of it the other side quite strong and even vengeful. Persephone, she's quite a fierce woman. So
So what did you do with that story?
I included the nasty bits, but most of the opera is actually what happens after the violence that she experiences occurs. So she's a small girl who's stolen away into the underworld to be the wife of Hades. And she's wandering there, and her mother is searching the earth, the goddess Demeter. She's searching the earth, trying to find her daughter. And it's quite a beautiful tale about mother and daughter and that bond there. But underneath this is Persephone, who's in the underworld. And for her to actually escape, it takes both women being strong and in and of themselves to actually allow her to be freed from the underworld. And so I wanted to emphasize those parts of the story. So the one singer takes on the representation of both the mother and the daughter, and the daughter after she's changed.
Wow. Oh, and then how do you then connect it with music? How do you find the sounds to tell the story?
One of the beautiful things about the operatic voice is that it's so expressive. And to be an opera singer, it takes your whole body to do. So you're singing really from your toes to the top of your head. So you've got this amazing palette of sound to begin with. And in terms of connecting human emotion and making the experiences of these women real, the operatic voice is the perfect incarnation of that, because you can make human and real their experiences. And I think that's why opera has lasted for so many hundreds of years, because it actually is quite a powerful storytelling device, just like country music, but in a different way.
And I mean, then you sampled other sounds in there as well. It's not just the human voice.
No, it's actually written for orchestra and a number of weird instruments, including a pipe organ and glass harmonica, and also found sounds. So I've recorded sounds of different objects and natural spaces and incorporated them in as well.
Why did you want to do that?
I wanted the opera to reach beyond the traditional sound realities of normal opera. So opera is normally a singer on top of an orchestra. That's a little bit hard for contemporary audiences to sort of engage with if they aren't already experienced with opera or classical music. So the music that I've written, it's challenging, but it's also very filmic. It draws upon ambience and electronic music, and pop music styles even in certain points, in order to be able to have the message travel further than just a sort of traditional opera audience.
Yeah.
And it's been incredibly popular.
That's also very, very good as well. Dr. Eve Klein is with us on ABC New England Northwest, and her her PhD study was the creation of the Pomegranate Cycle, which is a CD of an opera that she'd written and created. Is it common for people to have a PhD study that is a CD like that? Is that a common musical practice? Forgive me, I'm not familiar with it.
It can be. These days there's more of a movement in terms of creative practices research. I was a little bit unusual in that some people, they produce a work and then they write a small amount of text around it. I produced a full thesis and wrote and performed the opera and did the recording. I just couldn't stop. I was so interested. but yeah, that's becoming more and more common. And one of the great things about working within a university or research space in order to produce a work is that you can tackle things that are a bit harder to tackle in a commercial context.
Yes.
So it allowed me to be a bit wild and to go, okay, I don't like what I'm doing in opera all the time as a singer. What can I do to change it? And the university gave me the space to do that.
Well, and you, the process of putting it together, how long did it actually take you?
It was 4 years to really compose the work, and since the work was submitted for my PhD, it's actually been a couple of extra years performing it in different contexts, at festivals, in pubs around Australia at some points, overseas, and then of course the album itself.
What's it like to perform live?
It's amazing. It's the best thing in the world as a singer.
Wow. What reaction do you get from audiences?
Well, interestingly, I think I like singing in non-traditional spaces the best. Conventional opera audiences are very serious, but I've done some performances, and some of my favourites was a pub in the Blue Mountains called the Gearin in Katoomba, and it's one of the roughest pubs in the area. And I did a performance in the Gearin, and you know, my opera voice came out, my music came out of the speakers, and it's a pub full of, you know, normal everyday Aussies, lots of blokes, and I started singing, and people just sunk to the floor and sat down and started listening. And afterwards, I had, you know, a couple of hundred people coming around, patting me on the back, asking me questions about opera. You know, could they go and see an opera? What would I recommend? That's the kind of conversations I want to be having with people.
How extraordinary. Wow. So back to, I guess, your original question, which is sort of challenging the traditional role of women in operas and redefining it in a way. What do you think you've done in terms of at least opening the curtains a bit more on that, or changing the thoughts on that? Or,
well, I mean, it's probably a bit tough to explain on radio, but the opera is about how a woman recovers from rape. And the conversations around that I've had after performances of the work have been amazing. And it's not just about getting people to think about these issues. They're so hard to talk about. So if you can make people feel about it, it can open up the door for a bigger conversation. And there was a performance that happened in Sydney at the Underbelly Arts Festival. We did 11 shows as part of that festival last year, which was a sort of small version of the work. And the character steps out from the stage and reaches out and actually touches the audience members. She caresses their face, she holds their hands, and they look at her as part of the staging of the work. And the amount of tears that happened as part of that, they'd seen her journey, they'd seen where she'd come, and then they actually connected with her as a person.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the kinds of moments that you can't really reproduce by sort of describing. They're just so poignant for both the performer and the audience members, and it makes probably discussing these kinds of topics a little bit easier,
yeah,
a bit more human.
Did you approach it as a purely academic exercise, or did you think that you would actually make inroads to people on that at that level who may have experienced it or suffered something similar?
I certainly wanted to make those kinds of conversations and to make those kinds of inroads. And the work was actually inspired by some creative work that was presented to me by a student. And the original text for the aria that ends the opera was something I wrote in response to marking student work around that, the topic of rape.
Gee.
So you kind of, as an artist and as an academic, you do confront these issues in your work, and it makes you feel as a person. It's not just an academic exercise, and it could never be, I don't think.
How extraordinary. We're talking to Eve Klein. She's the University of New England's convener of music, and her CD is called The Pomegranate Cycle. It's been out for a while now, and you received a lot of recognition. Your work was named as a finalist for Vocal Work of the Year at the APRA Awards, and it's led to other recognition. What's it been like to receive the attention for this, you know, challenging work that you're presenting to society?
Well, you write a work like this and you don't expect it to travel very far. And one of the things that constantly astounds me is how far the work has travelled. I get fan emails from 15-year-old girls in Brazil.
Wow.
You know, it's been performed, it's been played on radio. I think it even charted in the Canadian college radio charts for a while. It's just bizarre. And it means that obviously the work is speaking to people. And I think the recognition means that I think I'm on the right track.
That's lovely. Well, you're a teacher at UNE as well, involved in that side of thing. But what's next for you aside from continuing on that path? You've got some big new projects on the horizon already.
I do, actually. One of the things that is really exciting is that I've just been given an Australia Council new work grant to write an opera about the recorder culture, the classical recorder culture in Armidale in the New England region. So going from one extreme to another, where something really local, driven locally, it's going to be a work performed by the Australian Recorder Project, which is a recorder duo of Alana Blackburn and Joe Arnott, who were both born in Armidale, raised in Armidale, and Alana is actually one of our music lecturers here. And they're going to perform the work at Vivid. It's going to be a multi-channel, quite contemporary work, but drawing upon the sounds of the region, interviews with local recorder teachers, local recorder players. We're going to sample recorder in the community, and it's quite radical to think that this little pocket of rural Australia has produced some of Australia's best recorder players and has this burgeoning classical recorder culture that doesn't really exist anywhere else in Australia.
And you're working on a radio opera as well?
I am. It's called Triptych, and it's kind of following on the tradition of, you know, those old radio plays that you had in the 1950s and 1960s, where you'd get this story in little sort of serial bits, but it's going to be an opera instead. And it's looking at colonialism and the history of colonialism.